This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hello and welcome to the Escape Hour. We are off to Chile and Peru today with Damien McDermott. We can call you Damo though, right? Can't we, Damien?
Yes, you can.
Okay, that's excellent. And also we have a fabulous co-host, Annika. Annika Briggs.
How's it going?
Hi, Annika.
Annika is here because she is a good friend and of mine and also of Damo's, and does a few slots at PBS and every now and again.
Every now and again when I can fit it in.
When you can fit it into your busy schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And they're mostly music slots, right? You're a music gal, whereas
I'm a
chat gal.
But I do love a good travel as well. Love a good travel.
For this show,
is that as a verb or a noun?
Yeah, all you need for this show is a love of food and travel and, of course, a good yak. That's what we do.
Quite popular these days, both food and travel.
Food and travel are very popular. Mm. You know, normally we're hearing all of the gossip in the travel industry from our good friend Russ, Mr.
Yep.
Travel Agent, who is full of news and updates and tips. And I remember him telling me several months ago that September is the prime time to buy your tickets to Chile and Peru because that's when all the best deals come out.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I looked and I found some $1,200 deals for flights in April, May. And I said, that's a great idea. I should do that. I didn't do that. So I don't know what the prices are now. But
you've got to have someone who knows what they're doing when it comes to buying. If you're looking to buy in a bargain, it's... You can use whoever you want, but go and find a travel agent to help you through that.
I would say exactly what Russ would say right now. Get yourself a good travel agent.
Yeah.
I'll do that plug while he is not here on his behalf.
Yeah. Not necessarily Russ, though, but you use whoever you like. There are
any travel agents. Any travel agent. I think it's we don't want to lose the art of travel agents. I mean, they could put some glamour back into the concept of traveling, which, you know, sometimes...
What, pillbox hats?
Well, you know, just like service, which seems to be, you know, although I did fly the Flying Kangaroo recently to Japan and it was lovely. Maybe it's because I've been spending too much time on other less quality airlines.
Yeah. I
won't mention any names.
No,
we're not allowed to mention any names on this particular program, although they do drop occasionally. But anyway,
in context,
we are going to talk about Peru and Chile. Now, Damien, can I call you Damo?
Yes, you can.
Okay, fantastic.
Damo McDermott.
Now,
McDermott.
Damien, 40. You were recently spent 4 weeks in South America.
Yes.
And I got you on the show because not only because I really want to go and find out more, because in actual fact, you're the only person in the studio that has been there. I mean, we would consider ourselves travellers, but none of us have been to South America. So you are the sole voice of reason.
And I'm the fountain of more knowledge.
Fountain of more knowledge than the rest of us. And so we want you to tell us all about your travels because also you did some hiking as well.
Yes, a lot of hiking.
So we want to talk about that because I love hiking. So I guess the first thing we should do is you could tell us where you went and why you were inspired to go.
Well, I went to Chile and Peru and... I spent about 2.5 weeks in Chile and about 10 days in Peru.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't taken a big adventure holiday for quite a while.
So you love an adventure holiday?
An adventure man.
Yes.
Yep.
And I had ideas in my head about where to go. And so I was trying to choose up between Europe. I was thinking maybe diving in Indonesia, going to South America, or going to South Africa or South America.
Mm.
And I couldn't decide, and so I just gave myself a deadline and I said, okay, I got to Sunday to decide.
Mm-hmm.
And polled my friends and thought about it, and so I booked a ticket for South America. And what really nailed the decision was that, because you can fly to Santiago and now you can fly direct, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go via Sydney, but I did have a friend who was living in Santiago. And he was recently in Melbourne, and so we caught up, and he told me about how great it was. And so I was like, well, I should go.
So when I go to Santiago, can I look him up? Will you introduce me?
I can.
That sounds like fun. So, I mean, South America, it's a massive country.
Huge.
Obviously, one of the crazy
continent.
Things.
What's a continent?
Continent.
Yeah.
Sorry. Continent with numbers of countries.
And people and cultures and languages. And
yes.
Fascinating indigenous history.
I saw this fantastic TV show on SBS. It's about clothing, and it's this young American model with a gap in it, in her two front teeth, who does this fantastic exploration of cultures and the way they dress. And she did one recently on Bolivia, and it was entrancing. And I know that you said, Damo, you were near the border of Bolivia.
Yeah, very close.
When you
like
were there.
A few kilometres.
So are you now so entranced with South America that you just want to go back and visit the other countries?
Yes. And the last place I went to on my trip, which was down in the Patagonia area of south of Chile, mm-hmm. in a town called Puerto Natales, and there's a national park called Torres del Paine, and it was just blow your mind, incredible. It's sort of like where the port is where you take the boat down to Antarctica, so it's very, very far south. And it was just like nothing I'd ever seen. And I loved it so much. I was there and I didn't want to leave. But, you know, then I was like, I'm going to go back.
Maybe I think you described it as emotional landscapes.
That's
hashtag
right.
Emotional landscapes.
Wow.
Wow. I love that.
It's a big What is an emotional landscape?
Well, actually, that comes from a Björk song.
Okay.
Yoga.
That makes sense. I brought my wheel.
Well, she's singing about, you know, Iceland and a friendship which reminded her of the landscapes in Iceland.
Okay.
And so, she thinks about emotional landscapes. And so when you were there, it was just like I was so much adrenaline going through my body because what you were seeing was just unbelievable.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. It looked almost intergalactic, like it looked like another planet.
So Annika is, of course, referring to your Instagram feed.
That's right.
I have been scanning it. How did you – I mean, knowing Annika Damo as well as you do – were you thinking or imagining what he might be feeling while he was there in this emotional landscape?
I could tell from his video that he was so overwhelmed because he just kept saying, it's amazing, it's great, it's amazing, it's great. Couldn't come up with any other adjectives because he was so, like, overwhelmed and loved it so much.
Yep. It was the double rainbow scenario. Does anyone remember the double rainbow?
Yes. Well, I was trekking to a absolutely massive glacier. It's like kilometres wide and I don't know how long it is, like kilometres and kilometres. And when you look at it from a distance, it's like a big, massive tsunami because the wall is so huge.
So that's walking on ice, right?
Well, I didn't walk on the ice. I didn't get far enough to walk on the ice, but I was walking through snow.
Okay.
That was the day it was snowing for pretty much the whole day.
And you were there in September?
Well, that was actually October.
Oh, it was October
by
that
time. That was spring
weather. Yeah. Spring?
Yeah.
Wow.
But you're really close to Antarctica.
Yeah, you're really close.
Yeah.
So there was icebergs and everything.
Wow. Yeah.
What does an iceberg look like in real life?
Well, these ones had fallen off the glacier and actually in a lake. And so you see photos of icebergs in Antarctica and they're like really blue.
Yeah.
And these icebergs were all blue. So they were like this really stunning translucent blue colour. And so,
because it's ancient water, it's been frozen for a very long time. And so it just quietly just sits there and bobs around like a.
Well, there wasn't quite
a lot of ice and a drink.
It was
like a G&T.
Well, that day was incredibly windy, and so because that area has got really strong winds,
right?
And the icebergs were all blown along one side of the lake because the wind had blown them all along that side. But luckily, that's the side of the lake I was walking along.
Right, is that the Roaring Forties winds?
I'd have no idea.
Just say yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
We'll look it up. And by the way, I should remind our listeners while we're here that if anyone is interested in asking Damo any questions about Peru or Chile that he may or may not be able to answer, you can SMS us on 0427JOY949. You can ring the front desk and talk to Neil on 1300. JOY949 or email us onair@joy.org.au. We will answer your questions, or if you've got any tips that you want to tell us about your travels or your experiences that you would like to share with us, please let us know.
You're fantastic. So what was your inspiration? Again, go back to that. What made you part with your shekels to get the ticket and go?
Well, I wanted to do an adventure holiday. Like, I didn't want to go and sit on a beach. I didn't want to go and just hang out in a city. I feel
But you could have gone anywhere.
You could have gone anywhere, but there was mountains. I was choosing between mountains and diving, really.
Right.
But a friend of mine, Sam, she was going at that time, and she was like, come along, do this trek with me.
Right, so it was someone else. The opportunity presented itself.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, because when we come back after a quick song, we're going to talk to you more about how you get this all organised, because it's not the part of the world that a lot of people go to. It's expensive. It takes a lot of logistics. Mm. You've got to be careful what time of the year you go. And we want to hear about how you managed all that process, because it's a convoluted structure.
Good idea, Mark. Let's get some tips.
Let's find out how this is going to work. You're on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Well, I did some classes, like travel classes, before I went. But
so what do they teach you?
In the travel class?
Yeah, what's travel Spanish?
Like, what is this, you know, where is this, how do I get there, what time is it?
Yeah, that's right.
How do I, you know, ordering a beer is very important.
Ordering a beer, wine, yep.
Yes, and just that's going through and understanding... like common words for like a bank or a supermarket, and then talking about food and understanding, you know, all the different words that you need to read a menu and order food, that kind of thing. Really basic.
Losito. You need to know losito.
Yes.
What's losito?
Sorry.
How about I speak very little Spanish? How do you say that? I know how to do that in Italian. Poco italiano.
I've got no idea.
Isn't it poquito in Spanish?
That's right. Poco.
Now, tell us about your planning.
This is not SBS. This is Joy 94.9, just in case you were confused, sitting in your Volkswagen Golf at Paran Market.
That would be me almost, but no, not at the Paran Market. I like South Melbourne better. But anyway.
It's a good market.
South Melbourne market's fantastic.
All of them are good markets.
They are. We're blessed.
You're market blessed.
Well, you know, in Sydney they don't have as many markets as we do, but we are definitely digressing. Mm. Now,
lots of markets in Chile.
We were talking before about your planning. Now, your friend Sam was really quite already down the track with her planning.
That's right.
Because there is also a lot of tour companies that do treks. Because you trekked in Peru.
That's correct.
And she had already done some research, but can you maybe give us an idea of, you know, how she chose the companies and what other preparations you did?
I was really blessed that she'd actually done a hell of a lot of research around trekking companies from Cusco to do trekking in the Andes. And so she was looking for local company, local guides, local crew, and that had really good, strong reviews on TripAdvisor. Mm. So she was looking for local, support the local community. So not going with one of the big international trekking companies. Yep. And she wanted
a
local one.
Great idea. And I think at this point we can say it was Incaland, is that correct?
Incaland Adventures. Run by a guy called Flavio.
And you would recommend them?
Oh, definitely.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah, so our guide on that trek, his name was Rudy.
Rudy.
Yeah.
Oh, good name.
He was a really good name, and he was a really great guy and hilarious and a little bit outrageous, which is great.
So would you recommend, we were talking before the break about the logistics of getting to a South American country, particularly some of these more exotic places where icebergs and glaciers are.
Yep.
Would you recommend that using a travel agent is the best way to do organised tours? Is it something that you could say that being an adventure traveller you'd do on your own, quite independently?
Or? I booked all the flights by myself.
Yeah.
And I think I was quite lucky because I was arriving in Santiago and going straight to a friend's house, you know?
Right, okay.
So it was like that meant that everything for me was quite easy. And so, but my friend who, Sam, who I went with, she got a travel agent to book her flights, but she was going to Peru, then Argentina, then Brazil. So she was like having lots of connecting flights everywhere. And so she used a travel agent to do all that her.
Mm. Yeah.
And what about the preparations for the trek? We were talking before the show about altitude sickness.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter how many days you go to the gym. I mean, obviously, before you trek, you want to be at least physically prepared.
Correct.
But to a certain extent, altitude sickness is something that's going to strike everyone quite differently. Is that your experience?
Yeah, well, I was lucky to not really have much effect by altitude. Mm. But unfortunately, Sam did. And I heard stories of other people who had similar experiences as Sam. So you can prepare as much as you want. Like Sam and I, we're doing lots of walking, lots of hiking to try to build up general cardio and build your legs up. And But when you get to 4,000 metres or 4,600 metres, you don't know what's going to happen because we live at sea level and so you're not acclimatised. And so the recommendation is that when you, like for this particular trek, when you go to Cusco, which is the like, launching point, you have 2 or 3 days to acclimatise and rest when you get there. And that was Cusco's at 3,300 metres. And so already when you're even walking up a few steps, you feel it in your chest.
So what, is it just a lack of...
The oxygen.
Oxygen,
is,
so you just feel winded? How do you feel?
You feel
lightheaded, winded?
Winded, a bit lightheaded, like you may just fall over sometimes.
Wow. And,
a bit of nausea.
Wow.
It's nausea.
Yeah,
as
nausea.
Well.
Yeah. So the first day of the trek, we went from 4,000 to 4,600 metres. And you're walking really slowly because your body's getting used to it. And, you know, when I finished that day and I lay down, because they said, you know, go lay down because it's really, really cold when we got to 4,600 metres. Went to the tent, lay down, and my head was just like banging headache. Ooh. It was like a drum. But I hadn't had a headache until I lay down.
Wow. Weird.
But poor Sam, she had headache, nausea, bit of a bad stomach, and she was a bit delirious.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had altitude sickness once when I was in climbing a mountain in New Mexico, and I got to the top of this kind of mesa, and there was a beautiful little pool with some rocks around it. And I thought to myself, gee, that rock looks so comfortable. And I lay down on a rock and fell asleep in the sun on a rock, like a little lizard.
Like a little maiden lizard.
And that was my version of altitude sickness. It was pretty mild. But did your friend Sam recover? I mean, how did you then adjust?
Well, on the first day of the trek, the crew, because we had crew with us, there was only the two of us on the trek, but we had like five crew with us because we were going very remote. And so on the way, the crew realised that she was maybe needing a bit of help, and so we had an emergency horse for people who have if you do get altitude sickness or hurt yourself. And so they were like, get on the horse. But she was like, no, I'm going to do it myself. I'm going to make it. And she did. But when she got up to the top, she looked like a ghost. She was like, she looked very pale.
Blue lips.
Yeah. And so the next morning, and the next morning, I did we were waiting for our horses because it was snowed overnight. And so our horses had got lost in the snow.
Oh.
And so we were waiting for the horses. And so I went on a bit of a side trek and came back and said, Sam, how are you feeling? Feeling good for it? And she goes, yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to walk. And I said, you have you spoken to Rudy? And she was like, yeah, he thinks I should take the horse. And I said, you're taking the horse.
Yeah.
Like when your guide says to take the horse. And so she spent quite a bit of the trek on the horse. But to be honest, when you're on the horse, you get to enjoy the view a lot more.
Because it sounds good to me. I'd be getting on the horse. get me on that horse. The view's good.
The view's it's good. It's relaxing. But the poor horse, of course, has to deal with you sitting on it. But there's no dig at you, Annika.
Oh, Annika's a slip of a thing.
I'm anti-horse racing, so anyway, let's not go.
That's right. Well, everyone else is at Derby. We're talking about how horses actually really can work.
Yep.
I mean, I know they're working as they're running around the race. Let's not racetrack, but anyway. We digress.
And so,
markets, horse racing, it's all chilly today.
Well, unfortunately, on the first day, or the first night we camped to 4,600 metres and we wake up in the morning and it snowed. And so most of that day when we were trekking, it was snowing. And so we did our first mountain pass and then Sam was walking. It was like muddy, like really, really deep mud and snowy. And so she slipped on a rock. And she was like, it was a very graceful fall, but then she hurt her knee, which she didn't realise until the next day. And so then she had altitude sickness and a bad knee. And so the horse was a really good thing to have.
She was in the wars.
She was in the wars, but she still really loved it. Like the landscapes were just
emotional.
Yeah.
Oh, Bjork.
Wow, that sounds incredible. And then when you got back to Cusco, you didn't end in Cusco, right?
No.
You went to Machu Picchu and you said that was really crowded. But still amazing.
Well, Sam and I, we did the trek from Cusco to a town called Ayate Tambo. And that was a beautiful town. And that was where one of our, a cowboy that was with us, was a real cowboy. He did the whole trek in sandals. The horses and the mules were his.
Where was he from, this cowboy?
He lived in the mountains. So, yeah.
Right.
But he wore a cowboy hat and he had a little vest on. But he wore sandals the whole time. But he'd grown up in that area. So he wasn't cold. He was trekking through the mud and the snow and everything, just in sandals.
Wow.
And so we went to Ayate tambo, and then we...
That's a cool word. Say it again.
I can't.
Sorry to put you under pressure.
You did it so well.
Oh, yeah. Oyenten. No, I can't say it.
Okay.
Trying too hard now.
Yeah, that's it.
That's a cool name.
It's, yeah, there's about 7 syllables or 8 syllables.
So what's the local language there, the indigenous language?
Quechuan.
Quechuan, right, yeah. Okay.
And so our crew and our guide were speaking Quechuan.
Right.
They weren't speaking Spanish.
Right.
They could speak Spanish, but they were speaking Quechuan.
Right.
Quechuan. And so that was really interesting to hear. It sounds like Arabic.
Oh, wow.
It's very,
wow. Okay.
It's very guttural, and, yeah, it's really amazing to... You know, hear a different, totally different language, and to meet people and hear stories. Because Rudy was telling us stories about their indigenous culture and, you know, what's happened, and like the Spanish invaded about 500 years ago. And so he was talking about, you know, the impact of that and then the modern situation. And so it was all very interesting.
Joy 94.9 has a huge range of programs available for podcast. In fact, Joy is one of the largest podcasting communities on community radio. If you haven't checked out our podcasting service, you're missing out. Visit joy.org.au, click on the podcast tab, and you'll find a list of Joy programs regularly sharing the best interviews, news and reviews. There's tens of thousands of hours for you to enjoy, so check it out now, joy.org.au.
We're going to go back to Peru because we were just about, before the ad break, to land in Machu Picchu. So, Damien, I know that it's a much desired destination.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about, you know, that part of your trek.
Well, when we finished the actual trek and we were heading to Machu Picchu, I said to Sam, I was like, are we going to be disappointed? Because we've seen so much. And when we got to Machu Picchu, it was just blowing your mind. It was busy. There's a lot of people there.
Where are they all from? South America, all around the world?
South America, America.
Yeah.
A lot of North Americans, but also quite a few local tourists, a lot of travellers.
A lot of selfie sticks.
A lot of selfie sticks. There was a death just recently from somebody. I bet he was taking a selfie of himself, but then he gave the camera to someone else and he was jumping in the air, and he jumped in the air and then fell over. He went down.
So be careful
taking a selfie.
Top travel tip of the day, of the week, of the year.
Yeah, don't die.
When you're taking a selfie, don't take steps back when you can't see what's behind you.
You know,
especially
when I was
in a place like Machu Picchu.
When I was traveling recently in Iran, I was in a beautiful sort of gorgeous domed room, and there was this massive generational gap between those people taking photos of the room and those people taking photos of themselves in the room.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I looked around and I went, wow, is this really generational move here?
Definitely.
Anyway, I hadn't thought of that. That's really intriguing.
It was fascinating.
Well, there were so many people, and so we woke up at like, I think, about 3:30 in the morning to join the queue, to get the bus to Machu Picchu, because we couldn't walk up because Sam had her sore knee.
But you can walk up there.
You can walk up. It's about 2 hours, 1.5, 2 hours, and it's quite steep. So you could tell the people who'd walked up because they were just, like, covered in sweat. Because it's more humid where Machu Picchu is, so it's warm and humid as a rainforest. And so we went to join the queue, and the queue of people getting on the bus is probably about 1,000 long.
Wow.
But because Sam had a sore knee, so I went to the back of the queue, but Sam got the thought that she was at the at the back of the queue, but she was at the front of the queue. And then
That's handy.
To jump in the front of the queue. So we were on the first bus going up. And when you're there, like, there was people, it opens at 6 a.m., and so we were there at about 5:45, and there was people queued up to get in. And when it opened at 6 o'clock, so people obviously got there really early, like trekked up in the dark to get there, and they were young travellers, and so when they got open, they cheered, and so there was a cheer, and then they just bolted. They ran as fast as they could to get to the spot where you can get the best
selfies.
Their best selfies, and they could take selfies then with no one else there. And they just bolted. They were running, and we were just laughing.
And because of the photo opportunity? Is that why people were so... Yeah. There's so much pressure to be
to
get first to the...
The pick-up with the least amount of people in the space.
That's right. And so there's sort of like a guided path that you go through. And you can go two ways, but most people go the way to up the top first to get the view.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there was a lot of people up there. But I didn't go up there. I just videoed them. I did time-lapse videos and
Oh,
so
cool, yeah.
It makes the Machu Picchu is really still and the clouds are slowly moving, but then there's little lines of ants running around everywhere.
Oh, cool, yeah.
Can we post that on... Actually, the Escape Hour doesn't have a Facebook page, so I was just going to say we could post it on our Facebook page, but we don't have one.
Create one, Fiona.
We need to create one. Mm. We definitely do.
Put that video up.
Put that video up. Now, so you said your guide knew some ways around Machu Picchu that were other ways.
Yeah, so the guide, who obviously knew the area and knew lots of people, which is one reason we could get to the front of the queue for the bus, but he took us to, like, areas where there was no one else at that time of the morning. So he was actually like, no, you're not queuing up to get in at 6, you're queuing up for the toilet, because you've got to the toilet now, otherwise later on you're going to be queuing for ages to use the toilet. So he, at 6 o'clock the toilet's open, so we were queuing for that. And then he took us...
Wow, that is an excellent travel tip. I love that.
Tips, yeah.
And then he took us to some places where there was virtually no one. And
amazing.
So we could get our photos. So my photos have virtually no one in them. And we could just enjoy the quiet. And just the location, we were blown away. We absolutely loved it.
Mm.
And so even though there was a lot of people, we still thought it was
absolutely
a really good thing
to
do. Yeah. And you can hire a guide, I think, there. But, you know, a lot of people who've done the trek, the Inca Trail, have a guide with them. And so the guide will take them around and talk about the history and that kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now we're going to flash forward in your trip to Santiago. You spent some time there, you've got a friend there, and then I know that we're sort of jumping, but mindful of time and how much, you know, we haven't really brushed on as yet.
Yeah.
Give us your impressions of Santiago.
Well, I had no idea what to expect. I hadn't done a huge amount of research before going. I had looked at the day before I left, I looked at some photos of Santiago. I did a Google image search, but I'd been looking at pictures of, like, where other places I was going in the, you know, more natural environments. So I didn't know what to expect, and it's weird because you think think of Santiago as a more well-to-do country, but as soon as I got off at the airport, I was like, okay, so Santiago isn't as wealthy as I thought. It's still a developing country. When I got from the taxi going to my friend's house, you know, you could see some slums and horses, people pet horses outside the slums. And so
horses?
Yeah. Well, they keep horses. I'm not sure what they do with the horses, but...
Are they working animals or are they...
I couldn't say, but there is...
Difficult to share a bed with a horse, like a cat or dog.
I don't think they kept them inside.
Maybe for warmth?
But they must be working animals.
They must be.
They must be.
Possibly.
Mm.
Creating stories here for these.
Making things
There is quite a lot of... You know, horses are very important to the culture of Chile.
Mm.
Is that so?
Yeah, there's like lots of farms and cowboys, and they wear cowboy hats and spurs. Like if you see some of the traditional dancing, there's a lot happening on the streets.
Now, talking about leather and spurs, did you date much while you were in South America?
Nice segue.
That's excellent.
Very good.
I went to one town. I went to called San Pedro de Atacama. I met a guy there, like a local guy from Chile.
Yeah.
And so we met and we ended up spending 8 nights together.
Yeah,
so
cool.
I stayed there twice as long as I planned to because we were...
Oh, what romance in the desert.
Yeah.
There's another emotional landscape.
And
obviously he spoke English.
Yeah, spoke English really well. He was doing some tour guiding there, but he also volunteers a lot of his time to with a local foundation called Foundation Tanti. Which means seed, and they work with indigenous communities around their water rights because you're in the desert and so water's a scarce resource.
Okay.
And there's lots of indigenous communities still there and with land rights, but there's also big, massive mines and mining companies.
Are these big, global, powerful companies?
Yes,
or
very powerful
local
companies.
Right.
Very powerful companies. The world's biggest copper mine is there.
Ah.
And there's a lot of lithium there, which is becoming more and more... precious phones
and batteries.
And so there's mining companies not dissimilar to Australia who get the right to take as much water as they want. And then the indigenous communities are reliant on that water. And so there's a lot of, you know, battles going on.
Is it starving people out? Or?
To be honest,
there's no water. How do their crops grow?
Well, a lot of food in the area gets imported in because San Pedro Atacama was, I think, a smaller town before, but now with tourism it's expanded to about 10,000 people.
Okay.
and all the food is imported, basically, because of all the tourists that are coming. It's quite a touristed town, and so everything you're eating is not a local. It's imported.
Does that make it expensive? Or
generally, I thought South America was it wasn't the cheapest place I've been to. Like, as Australians, we go to Southeast Asia a lot, and so you can...
Central America's really cheap. I mean, it's Mexico and Costa Rica. I mean, it's really... The food's really cheap.
And yeah.
Well, and delicious.
And delicious.
Well, the food was delicious. It was quite different to what I expected, but then again, I didn't know what to expect.
So what delighted you the most in the food?
What delighted me the most? Just the difference, really.
Empanadas? Anything deep fried and carbohydrate?
Empanada Pino was really good.
What was?
It's like an empanada Pino. It's like a Chilean empanada, and it's got beef in it with boiled egg and an olive. Always just one olive.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And that I didn't see coming.
What was that?
I didn't see an olive in that.
No, I didn't see an olive in that either.
Random olive.
I'm intrigued.
Was it a green olive or a black olive?
Black olive. Oh. Black olive with the seed in it. And so you got to, like, be careful.
Oh, okay. That's a teeth shatterer if you weren't anticipating it.
But, and what are the sort of spirits that they drink? Aside from beer?
Pisco.
Oh, I love pisco.
Yeah. So you had a few pisco sours?
I had some pisco sours and some piscola.
What's a pisco? You're taking the pisco here. I don't know.
Pisco is it's made in Peru and Chile, and it's like a brandy almost.
Okay.
It's almost like a brandy, and there are certain places, restaurants in Melbourne, there's one right around the corner here called Pastuso, which is Peruvian, and they make the most wicked pisco sours, and you can have them on Flinders Lane. Mark, you got to go there.
You got to go.
I'm intrigued.
You got to go. It's so good.
Fiona always introduces me to interesting nibbles between the Japanese egg sandwich and a pisco sour. I think I'm going to be set.
Always thinking about the next delicious thing to
next
eat.
Next drink.
And drink.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Tell us a little bit more. I mean, I don't know how you're going to start from the top, but let's talk about the food.
I'll start from my first night because I was blessed to have my friends living in Santiago, and they took me out that night for a Chilean meal. And so that meal was my first introduction to Chilean food, and I had no idea what to expect. And because, you know, when you think about South American food, maybe you're thinking about, like, barbecued meats and that kind of thing.
Mm.
But it was totally different. And so the best thing that I had was, like, their version of a... Oh, God, I can't remember the name of it.
Empanada?
No.
Taco.
Wine with fruit.
Oh, sangria.
Yeah, sangria. So I can't remember the name of the Chilean version, but it was a... Red wine, like Chilean wine, is absolutely stunning and incredibly famous. Beautiful.
They do good pinots, don't they?
Mm.
I didn't even drink a pinot there.
Oh. They had a good Chilean pinot.
They also do excellent malos.
Yeah, cool temperature, cool climate.
And they have some wines as well, which we don't get here, which in France they used to grow, but then France had fungus or whatever, which wiped out a lot of their breeds. And so I was drinking lots of Carmenera. I think it was Carmenera, which was... they were growing in Chile, and I was drinking that, like, almost every night.
Like water.
Yeah.
Is it a boozy culture, or did you introduce that?
No, I think there's definitely booze going on.
You're right.
Yeah. But so the first night I had red wine with strawberries in it, and it was, like, with some strawberry syrup. It was absolutely stunning.
Oh, wow.
It was so delicious. And unfortunately...
Splash a bit of cotties in and you're off.
It was the only time I drank it on the trip as well. And so I never tried it again, but I still remember it. And one dish that we had, which was had more than one occasion, was machas alla parmesana, which is clams with parmesan cheese and a bit of cream. Very rich, but really delicious.
So it was saucy.
Like just in the little, that was in the shell.
Yeah.
So it served in the shell.
Ah.
And so the plate would have like 12 clams on it.
Oh, so it's like a coquille Saint-Jacques.
So, like, what size clams? Like, were they as small as pippies or bigger?
I think they're razor clams. Or pink,
I love razor clams.
Pink razor clams.
Oh,
and
they're so good.
They were a little bit, they were about, like, you can really see this on radio, about that long. And, just with parmesan cheese and a bit of cream, and I'm not sure they had chives on them, but they were really, really good.
Oh, yum.
So it sounds it's strong Spanish influence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was one dish, but sort of like with local flavours as well, because another dish was pastel de choclo, which is a beef and corn casserole. And that was almost like creamed corn, so corn South America. And so corn with minced beef. And it was actually quite sweet, the one that we had with cheese on top. I think that cheese on top. And so that was a really interesting sort of casserole-y clay pot dish.
Mm. And did you talk about the chip dish? We've got to get to the chip dish because this sounds...
What's the chip dish?
Okay.
Everyone likes a chip.
Well, hungover. So visualise.
Was quite hungover on a Sunday because the night before we went out to like a club and then we went out to a gay club, got home at 5:30 in the morning. And so we went to this antique market that day and there was lots of... We went to the food area and really fascinating to watch what everyone was eating, like really quite massive pieces of meat with chips, a lot of chips. And but the pieces of meat
fries,
were absolutely...
French fries, potato chips, how, what kind of...
Like French fries.
French fries. Okay. Yeah.
Skinny or fat?
Fat. Mm. And like the pieces of meat were just like huge and a lot of people were sharing them, but some people were doing it by themselves. But we got a dish which was called Chorillana, which is a Chilean dish, and it was a plate of fries with, on top of it, like roast pork, pork sausage and fried eggs. And you eat that with ketchup and, like, American mustard.
And hope to survive.
And it was disgusting. It looks disgusting, but it's a really one of the national dishes, and it's, you see it around quite a bit.
So, what do you drink? Or do you drink with that beer, or
I was drinking a beer like Hair of the Dog.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It sounds like it would need to be washed down with beer.
Yeah, that's right. I think so.
Wow, that sounds
and
crazy.
A lot of hot dogs as well, but done in a different way. So I was like hot dogs, and we're everywhere. A lot of street food with hot dogs, and But I had one called Italiano, and it was with fresh tomato, mayonnaise, and fresh avocado, and, like, masses of fresh avocado. And so you're eating it, but it's not heavy. It was really like eating a salad, but you're
delicious.
Eating hot dogs. Yeah, it was really good.
So now, if you didn't eat meat, do you think you'd be able to survive very long?
I did see some vegetarian plate restaurants, so I think that you could definitely get around.
Okay, maybe not so much luck if you're a vegan.
Yeah.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This is the final minutes of the Escape Hour. We have been eating our way through Chile. We haven't quite got to all the delicious food for Peru because we do know that Peru has an incredible food culture, but certainly Damo's been giving us a really good feel for the food, good, bad and different. But overall, though, you just loved the experience and looking forward to getting back there.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to go back. And go down to the deep south, like in the Patagonia area, where it was iceberg land.
Famous for their toothfish.
Yes, that's right.
Did you eat any?
No, because it's arguable whether it's actually sustainable or not.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, well, there is a restaurant in Melbourne where they do have toothfish on the menu.
Yes,
actually, and it's quite. I have tried. I confess, I have tried it, but yeah. I feel guilty.
Well, it's actually listed, and Australia is listed as sustainable, but in Chile. You can't guarantee that. Yeah.
It's overfishing.
Yeah, overfishing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So adventure travel, highly recommended. You'd go further down and you'd go back to Chile?
Go back to Chile, definitely. There's other areas. Pucón looks amazing. Other mountains to climb and other sites to see. And, yeah, the Patagonia area, I would love to just explore that, you know, that over a couple of weeks or 2 or 3 weeks.
Damo, thanks so much for coming on and telling us all about it. It's been really fantastic, such a breadth of chats and conversations. And thank you, Annika, for coming in and chatting with us about it because, you know, we've all got travel on our mind.
We do. We'd all be getting on a plane and jetting off any chance we could if we had endless amounts of money.
Money and time.
Money and time are absolute luxuries when there's a... Well, you know, next time, Annika, you plan a trip because I know you just got back from Vietnam.
Yeah.
Next time we'll have you on to tell you... We could talk about Vietnam.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
We'd love to.
And talk about travelling with children in Vietnam.
Yeah.
That could be interesting. Yeah. We don't talk about travelling with children on this show.
Right now we've got Word to Word. It's currently 1 minute... it's 2 o'clock. Joy 94.9.
Thanks, everyone. See you next week.
See you next week.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.